You've probably heard the statistic that 90% of restaurants fail in the first year. Well, first of all, that's not true. It's more like 60% in the first 3 years. But no matter what the exact figure is, the sentiment still holds. That is, the restaurant industry is really, really tough to make a go of it in. So it would seem like a long shot that an immigrant who never went to high school, let alone culinary school, would open one of the most successful fine dining establishments ever. And, oh, by the way, go on to build a conglomerate worth $400 million. Wolfgang Puck is arguably the most famous chef in America. He is also, by most accounts, the founder of the celebrity chef movement, for better or for worse. His restaurant Spago launched the open kitchen concept and gourmet pizza, and an illustrious portfolio of restaurants from Bahrain to Istanbul to Dubai and Grand Rapids. He's the owner of 27 restaurants in all, with another 80 Wolfgang Puck Express operations out there. He's also got a line of cookware, 6 cookbooks, a line of prepackaged food, and a catering business that handles the Oscars, the Emmys, and the Governor's Ball. He's also about to launch WolfgangPuckCookingSchool.com, which is exactly what you think, a membership-based online cooking school. Long story, made just a little bit shorter. I think you can understand why we wanted to sit down with Wolfgang Puck for our latest installment of Corner Office.
We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
We met him in the kitchen of his namesake restaurant at the Bel Air Hotel here in L.A.
So here's the kitchen. Here's the main kitchen. Over there we do room service and banquets at the end over there. So everything is organized. Like, for example, the fish and the pasta comes from this side. Over there they do the meat and the grill is over there.
Yeah, how do you think of it? How do you organize things around here?
Well, I think we are in a way like a football team. You know, you have the dining room staff and the kitchen staff. So everybody has to have the same goal. If everybody says we want to be the best at what we do, then we are successful. So let's say if the kitchen is the defense or the offense, whatever you might call it, so they have to do a great job. And the same thing is with the wait staff, with the busboys, with everybody. They have to do a great job, because if one slacks off, we won't be successful. Just like you can score 50 points in football, but if the other team scores 51, you still lose. Everybody has to think the same way, and everybody, including myself, have one boss, and that's the customer. The customer can fire me and all the other people around, because if they don't come, I won't have a job.
You can sit down for a little bit?
Yeah, let's go far over there.
Far over there? All right. Yeah. All right. Well, it's your restaurant.
Okay, good.
Exactly. Oh, man. Ooh, these are nice and soft, cushy banquettes. Well, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Is it true that you work 6 days a week in your hotels and your restaurants?
I only work 6 days a week, so I think I'm slamping off. It used to be 7, but I think now I take Sundays off, and I also take Monday night off, because I really believe I have a family, and I also have to make the family happy.
So here's the thing. You're 66 years old. You don't have to, you don't have to be working 6.5 days a week anymore.
You know, when you love what you do and you have passion for what you do, it's easy. I had a big talk with my wife. We have a restaurant in Maui, Spago in Maui, at the Four Seasons. And on the way home, she said, you should slow down. And I said, what do I going to do then? You have to get me a job description I'm going to like as much as going to the restaurant, do the cooking, or go to the fish market or the farmer's market. So she hasn't come up with something yet.
Give me the Wolfgang Puck origin story.
The origin story. Well, I was born in Austria. As you said, 66 years ago in 1949, went to school until I was 14, started an apprenticeship as a cook in Austria, did that for 3 years from 14 to 17, and then I found out that the food in France was more interesting and better, and so I moved to Dijon in Burgundy for a year, and then I saw a Guide Michelin, which is this famous restaurant,
Michelin guide,
and they had 1, 2, and 3-star restaurants, and I was working in a 1-star restaurant. So I said, now I cannot go home to Austria. I want to work in a 3-star restaurant. So I wrote every afternoon. I was in my room writing letters to all the to Trois Gros and Bocuse and La Tour d'Argent and Maxime's and whoever had 3 stars at that time. And then finally, the first one answered was Beaumanière, which is in south of France near Avignon. Yeah. And so I started to work there with Monsieur Tullier, and he was really became my mentor, because that changed my whole way of looking at food. So he had not only a restaurant with rooms, also, you know, the Queen Elizabeth stayed there and yeah. Picasso stayed there. So he had all these famous people stayed there. But he had his own vineyard, his own olive groves. He had his own gardener. Like, he had six gardeners. So we got everything fresh from the garden every day. The fish came from Marseille or around Marseille, so which was an hour by car away. So it was the first time I really tasted food which was so incredible and so different. And his preparation, his technique changed all the time. So he was really my mentor. Up to then, I didn't know if I'm going to be a cook or maybe a truck driver.
Hmm. What was it like in that first restaurant when you were 14?
It was terrible. I started out, I had a stepfather who was terrible, really, with me, with my mother. He was drunk all the time, and he always told me I'm good for nothing. So then I started to work in Villach, in this small town, in a hotel called Hotel Post. And about a month into work, the chef told me the same thing. He said, you're good for nothing. I'm going to fire you. You're going to get fired, so you can leave. Because we didn't have enough potatoes for lunch or whatever. It was all my fault. I was like that high and 14 years old. And so then I said, you know, I cannot go back home because my father told me, you know, so you're good for nothing. You're going to be back home in a month, if that long. So then I went to the river and to the bridge. And I said, I much rather kill myself. I jump in the river than going back home.
Wow.
So then after standing on the top of the bridge for like an hour, and it was November, the end of November, the beginning of December, and then all of a sudden I said, you know what, I'm just going to go back tomorrow and see what happened. So then I went back home, couldn't sleep all night, went really early in the morning to the restaurant, to the hotel, and the apprentice who was ahead of me was so happy to see me there, because if not, he would have to peel potatoes and do all that again. So then he hid me in the vegetable cellar. And then 2 weeks later, the chef comes down in the vegetable cellar and sees me sitting there peeling potatoes and said, what are you doing here? I said, I cannot go home. I kill myself before I go back home and give my stepfather the right, you know, that he got what he told me before. So then he called the owner of the hotel, and the owner of the hotel came, and I told him the same story. And so then he said, okay, why you don't come and work in our other hotel? They had another little hotel in town. So they sent me there, and there they had a woman chef, and she heard the story, and then she said, don't worry, just don't talk too much, just be quiet, do your work, and I will help you along. And she did. She was wonderful. So it did not start out on the right foot, really.
Well, yeah. So how did Wolfgang Puck become Wolfgang Puck? I mean, you come to the States in the early 70s, yeah. You get a job in a couple of restaurants, nothing works out, and then...
Well, I got this job at Ma Maison, where I met a lot of people who were very...
Ma Maison here, right?
Ma Maison in Los Angeles, yeah. And there I met Orson Welles and Billy Wilder and Sidney Poitier and all these people, Kirk Kerkorian, and, you know, who are, half of them are gone now, you know. And so when I opened Spago in 1982, I knew these people, and they all started to come to Spago. So I wanted Spago to be a neighborhood restaurant. But it became this huge success. And I got lucky because after 5 years, I told Patrick at Ma Maison, I said, Patrick, we're going to, because I owned 8% of the restaurant and he owned the majority. So I said, we have to form a 50-50 partnership. And then I told him, I found this restaurant, this place up on Sunset. I also had some investors already lined up. So I felt good about it to become 50-50 with him. And he looked at me and says, you know, I always going to own 51%. Then I looked at him and said the same. I said, I always going to own 51% then too. So I thought maybe if we're going to just own each one 102%, you know. And he says, no, you can only own 49%. And I said, okay. So then in 3 months, I'm leaving. So then 2 weeks later, the news got out. I told in the kitchen, the waiter, and this and that. They heard I was leaving. I was opening my own restaurant. And 2 weeks later, like, he took my car away, my credit card from the restaurant away, and everything. So I left. So it was like a bad divorce.
Yeah.
And then in 82, that was in 81, and in 82, I opened Spago. And it became so successful. And Ma Maison went down by 86 or something, or 85. It had no more business. It closed down. And the funny thing was, because Patrick should have known better, because when I started, the restaurant did $18,000 a month. My first paycheck bounced.
Yeah.
I had to pay everybody COD. Then when I left 5 years later, we did over $300,000 a month in the same facility. But he still thought the customers came because of him.
Okay, so which are you then? Are you a chef or are you an entrepreneur and a businessman?
Why not be everything? I'm a husband, I'm a father, I'm a chef, I'm an entrepreneur, a businessman, for sure, because I like everything. I love new things. I love starting new businesses. That's why I have so many different things. And I think I get very excited coming to the restaurant. I get very excited opening a new restaurant. Now we decided to open all over the world. We just opened a Spago in Singapore. Last month, we opened Spago in Istanbul and so forth.
How do you keep control, though, of the quality of this enterprise, right? Because it's your name on all of it, and you're in airports, and you're in Singapore, and you're in fast food. And, well, not fast food, but you're in, you know, frozen foods and all that jazz, right, and all that. How do you, I mean, you're the guy, and yet you can't possibly touch all this.
You're absolutely right. Well, the most important thing, even having one restaurant, let's say the Bel Air, Spago, and Cut, the three restaurants in our neighborhood here, I cannot be in all three of them.
So what do you do?
So what do I do is I have people with me for a long time. I train them really well. Like Hugo, who is the chef here, he started with me before we opened Spago in Beverly Hills, so he's with me 20 years. He started like he was a kid, basically, you know. And so I have a lot of these people like that. Lee Hefter, who is my second in command, he is with me since 95.
Second in command. So you have like a chief of staff, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then I have Alex, who does the whole front of the house, Alex Ressing. And then I have Tom Kaplan, who is with me for 33 years, who does all the negotiation for new places when we open, for new deals and stuff like that, and looks that they are built properly. So I have a group of probably 10 people below me who are running each one their business, but they all report to me.
So how? What kind of manager are you, right? Are you a hands-on kind of guy in everybody's stuff,
or I'm good at delegating because if not, I could not do that.
Right.
But I'm also very hands-on. So they don't know. I might come here and I say, I don't like that, change it.
Yeah.
So I don't tolerate. So I tell everybody, I'm so easy as long as everybody does what I want.
Right. you are a conglomerate, right? You've got Wolfgang Puck, your enterprise, and then there's three operating divisions, and you're in airports and all that stuff. Have you sold out a little bit to make the money that you get out of the airports and the frozen pizza and all that stuff?
You know, I don't believe I sold out at all because I still control everything. So if we have a restaurant in the airport, we have a commissary where we make the soups, where we make the pizza dough, where we make the cheese mixture, where we make the pesto. So that way it's everywhere the same. So we make canned soup. You know, so does everybody go to Spago or to the Bel Air Hotel every day? No. Sometimes people stay home, and sometimes it's good to have convenience food. I mean, I remember my little boy, Alexander, one day. I made some dish at home. He didn't like it, and he went in our pantry, took my can of minestrone soup and says, I just want soup, and threw the soup on the table. So I said, well, you know, if the kids like it, so it's a good sign. And you know what? We also had failures. You know, it's not that everything I touched was 100%. I remember in 1990, I opened a brewery called Eureka.
Oh, wow.
Which was a restaurant with a big brewery. We were supposed to make 1 million cases of beer. I thought I'm going to establish a brand.
1990. You were too early for the craft beer thing.
No, man. I wasn't too early. It was the timing for something good is always good. But what happened is my three partners in the brewery didn't pasteurize the beer. So when we send it out to the stores, half of it came back because it started to re-ferment in the bottle. It started to get all cloudy. So after 2 years of that business, instead of selling 1 million cases of beer a year, we sold 30,000 cases.
Yeah.
So 2 years later, we had to close down the store. I invested more money in this place than in any other restaurant. And I had to take care even of some of my partners who I co-signed for them too. So I had to pay off a lot of money. So, you know, it's not always everything is right on. But I learned from that experience that I should do only what I know. Before that, I said if I open a gallery, if I open a shoe store, it would be successful because we opened Spago, it was a hit. Chinois was a hit, was the first fusion restaurant. Then I opened Postrio in San Francisco. It became crazy. It became the place in San Francisco. So I said, well, everything is working. I just have to open the doors and people will come and be on the waiting list and fill up the restaurant. And with Eureka, I said, you know, I better stick to what I know. So I was in the beer business, in the marketing, in the producing of it. And so it happened that it lived for 2 years and then I closed it down. It was impossible.
Are you okay when people call you the first celebrity chef?
I hate that word, celebrity chef.
All right.
So
you're not okay then?
No, I'm not.
But here's the thing. I mean, you kind of made that happen, right? You got celebrities in your restaurant and you became the guy and now...
Yeah, but that's not who I am. You know, I walk around. I don't walk around with a Brioni suit.
Yeah, we should say you're wearing blue jeans and a chef's jacket. And that's about it. You haven't shaved in a day or two.
Exactly. So it's not for me. It's not that I don't look out for the money first. I like to do projects and do them as good as I can, as well as I can, and then hopefully we make money with it. Like with this cooking school online, I don't know how it's gonna work. If it's gonna work, it's $9 a month to sign up. So you become a member of the school, and we'll see how many people will sign up.
How important is it for you as a chef to influence culture? Because that's kind of what you've done.
Yeah, I think when we open Spago, for example. We were the first restaurant with an open kitchen where I went to the farmer's market. I went to the farm, down to the Chino farm. Mm-hmm. I went to the fish market. Before, you had all these fancy restaurants like Jason's, whatever. They brought your seafood on an ice bag, mm-hmm. basically like that, and some ketchup with horseradish and everything. So that was the traditional thing, and they cut maybe a steak in front of you. But there was no imagination because it wasn't a chef who ran the restaurant. It was some owner or mm-hmm. a maitre d' or a director of the restaurant. So when I started Spago and Paul Prudhomme, may he rest in peace, started Cape Paul in Louisiana in New Orleans or Alice Waters up in Berkeley. So we were really the first chefs who controlled the destiny of the restaurant. We cooked whatever we felt like, not what somebody told you, you know. And I don't know if you saw the movie Chef.
Oh, of course, with Jon Favreau. I love that movie.
Yeah, Jon Favreau is a good friend of ours. Actually, I taught him how to make omelets. Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go.
So I think it was that's how it used to be like that, where you had the restaurant manager said, right. You know, we did this food for the last 20 years. It's going to be good for another 10 years. I'm not like that. I look for constant change. There has to be an evolution. And I will come here. I told Hugo, who is from Guatemala, but a very smart kid. The chef here at the Bel Air. So I told him, but we have to change. Why don't you get some influences from Latin America into our food, modernize it, not to make it traditional, make it your own. It's just like painting or music. You know, how many love songs are out there?
Lots.
Still, they come up with a new one, and it hits the chart and look like Adele. She sells 25 million records.
The dining public now has the opportunity to weigh in on what you do.
Oh,
yeah, look, you know what's coming, right?
Yeah, I mean, I know what's coming.
There's Yelp out there and TripAdvisor and this and that, uh-huh. and it's you're sort of at the whim of somebody having maybe a not great experience in your restaurant.
You know, I'm confident that we do a great job. Do we make mistakes sometimes? Yes, everybody does. So nobody is perfect. So I think it's just how do we handle if somebody is not happy? And I tell everybody in the dining room, I said, you know, I don't care. If somebody says they're not happy, we don't charge them and we say we are sorry. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we invite them back to come again. Now, it doesn't happen often, but it can happen anywhere. You know, in any business, you know, not everything is always the way you want it. Maybe somebody gets grumpy, they don't get the table they want. So they already start out on the left foot, you know. So there are so many little things. Maybe the busboy didn't bring the coffee. Maybe this one was not right. I mean, there are so many variables because we have so many people working in a restaurant. Like at Spago, we have 160 employees. And so one can mess up really easily. So we have just to train them as much as we can. Because these days, with the online business, everybody is a food critic. Everybody can send out instant things, even if you're not on Yelp or in your open table or whatever it would be. So everybody can be their critic, and everybody can just push the button and send it to 100 followers. Some people have 1,000 followers or 100,000 followers and says, you know, I didn't like the restaurant or I loved the restaurant.
You're in a position now, and have been for a number of years, where you can be a mentor to a lot of upcoming chefs.
Yeah.
How do you pick the up-and-comers, and how do you balance teaching them with knowing that they're eventually going to want to leave and start their own places that are going to compete?
You know what? It is true. Some people leave, some people stay. We just opened a year and a half ago, for example, in Dubai.
Yeah.
So the sous chef from the Bel Air, who was here for 4 years, became the chef in Dubai. Last year, we opened a Spago in Istanbul. And there, the sous chef from Spago in Maui became the chef at Spago in Istanbul. Now, he's Israeli, so it's perfect. It's closer to home. So I have people from all over, like in London. Cut in London, David McIntyre is with me since 95, since we opened Spago in Beverly Hills. So now for 4 years, he's the chef in London and doing a great job.
It's interesting just organizationally that you know the names of all these guys who work for. They're all guys, but they're all men, by the way, right?
The women? They are from 30 to 40.
Yeah.
So I don't just pick somebody out of the blue and say, okay, now you are the chef there. I want to make sure that these people are really, really good. Now, if I don't give them the opportunity to grow, they will leave. For sure. Yeah. But now we established a way that they have a chance. If a sous chef is really good, he will become the chef.
Where are the women, though? Because there are great women chefs out there.
Oh, totally. You know, it really depends on the thing. We have, like, Tracy Spillane is the manager. She manages this place, Spago, and Cut.
Mm-hmm.
Hillary now is the sous chef at Cut in Beverly Hills. So, but she's still 25 or 26, wow. So she still has to go for a few years.
Yeah.
Sherry Yard became famous being our pastry chef. She's gone now. Now Della is the pastry chef. So I think they are coming up to it. The problem is with, I think when we have a woman chef, once they get married and then they have kids, they're raising their children and they said, okay, I'm going to stop for a few years. So it's more difficult for women than for men at the career. Then they have to wait a little bit maybe.
This is a famously just physically hard industry to work in, right? I mean, you guys work till 2-3 in the morning. You're on your feet all the time. It's not great pay unless you're at the top of it. How do you keep it going? How do you attract new people in? And how do you further the field? I guess.
I think in restaurants like the Bel Air Hotel or Cut, for example, people in the dining room make very good money.
Yeah.
The tips are very high because the average check is high. So it's not like being in a cheap restaurant where the average check is $20. So if you get 20%, it's $4. And you might do the same amount of work. So here you make good money at the hotel. We generally pay people well in the kitchen because I'm a chef. So I said, you know what? We have to pay people really well. So I think one of the reasons people don't leave is because we pay them well. We always had insurance, dental, medical insurance for the last 30 years for all the people. So I have people like at Spago, which is our flagship, our oldest restaurant. We have the father is working and the son and the daughter is working.
Hmm.
I mean, so it's like the second generation came to work with us in a restaurant. And these are maybe some Latino people who came. They were busboys and they might still be busboys or maybe a food runner or whatever. And their son is a manager. So it's really an interesting thing to see the sort of father making a better living. And then now the son is going into the same thing.
Do you ever look around and go, yeah, I did all right?
You know, I always tell people I'm only at the beginning. So the beginning was all right so far.
I know what you're thinking. How could you not ask Wolfgang Puck what his favorite things to eat and cook are? Well, we did, but he pretty much copped out. He said it's all about how fresh the ingredients are, so there you go. Now you know. All right, that's it for this episode of Corner Office. We have been thrilled to see more and more of you downloading this thing every month, so do us a favor. If you like what you hear, leave us a review in the iTunes podcast store and tell your friends, too. Word of mouth isn't just for the restaurant business, you know. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We'll see you next time.
So you tell me that I'm a lucky man, and you're so right, yes, you're so right. Girl, you know, there's no other place I'd be right now.
This is APM.